Good evening. This is Shaya Ostrov, and I welcome you to the first session of our Breaking Free Forum, which is a 12-session weekly presentation workshop, which will take you through an in-depth journey of liberation as we go through the book Breaking Free. Before I begin, I just want to say, give my hakaras hatov, I thank you to Hashem who enabled this to happen. We have so many beautiful ideas and skills to offer you that will enable you to escape the prison of whether it's your habit, your addiction, or your lifestyle. I want to thank Menachem and Chaim from GYE and my close friend Naftali, who has kind of walked side by side every step of the way. And we have a moderator who is not here this evening. He's in Eretz Yisrael, and we just had a hard time hooking up. But he will, Bez Hashem, be here for the next session. First, let me go through a very, very brief bio of myself, who I am, how I got started, how this happened. So I've been a therapist for many years. I don't really call myself a therapist anymore. Once I discover the magic, if you will, of Menuchas HaNefesh, and I've written a number of books on Menuchas HaNefesh, on marriage, on dating, on personal development. Each of the books on Menuchas HaNefesh are called the Menucha Principle. There, you can see it. I don't know if you can see it, but they're online. They're, Baruch Hashem, they sell very well because they're very effective, very helpful. And it's a very different perspective than that most of you have learned. In my work with singles and married men and women, I discovered, far beyond my belief that many struggle with the issues that we're relating to, of Shmiras Einayim, of issues related to behavior, feelings, thoughts, all the kinds of things that entrap so many people in the world today. And through my work with Menuchas HaNefesh, as people came to see me, I discovered some wonderful skills using this approach. But I kind of did it in a very personal way and didn't advertise. As people came to help in their dating and their marriage, I kind of shared what I had learned and found that the effects were really beyond what I expected. I never at any point had any intention of going public on what I was doing. However, around the time of COVID, there was a young man who came to me, so young by my standards. I'm a, for your information, I'm a father, a grandfather, I'm a great-grandfather. I'm up there in my years. His name was Chaim, and what Chaim shared with me changed my life. And I'm going to share with you tonight because there's a story about Chaim in the book, which we'll be showing you soon. And right after I spoke to Chaim, I received a call from one of the administrators at Guide Your Eyes, who was familiar with my work on Menuchas HaNefesh and asked if I could develop a program on Menuchas HaNefesh for Guide Your Eyes. Normally, I would have shied away, but since I had developed all this material and working with singles and with married couples, I said, you know, it's really Basharit, it's really Hashkacha, as they say, it's really Hashem's hand in this because I have a lot of material. I never was going to share, but now that you're asking me, I certainly will share it. And for the next year and a half, I work with people at Guard Your Eyes and others individuals like Everton and Israel. Marvelous people, and we developed a program which went online. And from that program that went online, I came up with the idea of writing the book. I felt the book would be much more accessible to a lot more people, and that's what we did over the next year. I had my doubts as to whether the book would receive rabbinic endorsement and a publisher. You know, these are difficult issues to talk about in the Orthodox from community, but to my surprise, it was welcomed with open arms, and we got the endorsements of some very special, important Rabbanim, and we had an excellent publisher in Judaica Press, and it all happened. And that's how the book, Breaking Free, which is over here, I don't know if you can see it, but that's Breaking Free. It's hard to see with all the blurs, but... So, this program came out of responses that I was getting from people reading the book. And I decided there were so many responses coming in, I really couldn't handle them. And I came up with the idea of a 12-session program that would enable people who are reading the book and going through it to really go in-depth in each aspect of this book, particularly what we call the 10 guiding lights. And the 10 guiding lights are skills and meditations that make up the content of this approach, of the breaking free approach, excuse me. Now, I want to tell you one thing about the content, so you'll understand. In no way am I trained to be a sex therapist or an addiction therapist or anything like that. I have never attended a 12-step group. I have never attended an SA group. I have never read the big book. I don't know anything about any of this stuff, but it's interesting that people who read the book and who have been in programs say it can't be because they're so similar to what you're doing. But the reality is they're not similar. They are similar in the sense that they both have the same source. The same source is Hashem, is the Torah, because all these concepts of spirituality clearly come from the Torah. But the source here is very different because this is coming from a Jewish Torah perspective, not a spiritual perspective. And as you will see, it creates a whole change in one's lifestyle and the way we think and the way we feel. So, and what we're going to learn here is the power of Avas Hashem and the power of Avas HaTorah-based experiences that are integrated and actually an integral part of this program that's going to transform your very life and enable you to taste the very sweet flavor of freedom. So let me go over the program now that we're going to be going through today and over the next 12 weeks. Today we're going to do an introduction into the program. We're going to do a number of readings from the book. The first is a reading of Chaim that I mentioned before. And then we're going to cover what I call the new life narrative, which is a new perspective of looking at your challenges. And then we're going to read a wonderful fable that I made up for this book, and then we're going to go into how to go through the program either solo or with a chavrusa, with a partner, with a designated partner. And in terms of finding a chavrusa, some of you have asked to find one. Tomorrow we'll have more information of how the chavrusa program is going to be laid out. The next 11 weeks, we're going to learn the 10 guiding lights. Now, the 10 guiding lights, which I'm not going to go into individually now, because I'll just confuse you, but I'll tell you the first five are related to the relationship between yourself and your own neshama, the relationship between your kind of social and cultural self, and your relationship to Hashem. And these are the first of the five guiding lights. And they don't require you to make any change in your life, minor changes at most, but they do enable you to cultivate a very special relationship that serves as the foundation of this program. The second of the five guiding lights are related specifically to skills and to perceptions that enable you to take control over those urges and addictions or habits that are wreaking havoc with so many of your lives and depriving you of the life you deserve both today in Olam Hazeh and eternally in Olam Haba, because that's where we're all headed. So those are the second of the five guiding lights, and they relate to five dimensions of self, which I will mention right now. In other words, the way we change five aspects of ourself. We change the way we think, we change the way we feel, we change our physiology, you know, the way our body works, we change our behavior, and we change our relationships to those around us, whether we're dating or we're married or professional or social or family, whatever the case may be. Now, to ask, why do we have the first five guiding lights not related at all to these, to behavior or to thoughts or to feelings? I want to give you a metaphor, a mushal, as we call it. So let's say you had a property in the family that was in the heart of Yerushalayim, and today that property is worth many millions of dollars. But you're not a wealthy person, and you had no way of putting up any kind of structure on that lot of land. So what you did is you put a fence around that lot. Maybe it was in the old city, maybe it was in Rehavia, maybe Talbiya, maybe it was somewhere else that you want to be in Yerushalayim. So you go to Yerushalayim and you visit this lot that's yours, and you see it is packed with all kinds of people who more look like refuse than anything else, you know? Guys with piercings in their nose and their eyeballs and everything else, and tattoos all over the place, and you know, they're smoking weed and they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And you say, hey, get out of here. Get off this property, right? And they say to you, what do you mean get off this property? You can't do anything. You don't have any money. You can't build here. It's empty property. Let us stay here. Don't be such a, pardon the expression, Jew, right? You know, leave us alone. And you're kind of intimidated because they're right. You don't have a penny to your name. You can't build anything there. You don't want them there, but they kind of won the argument. But let's say you're on the way home or back to your hotel or wherever you're staying in Yerushalayim, and somebody gives you a note, and your aunt just passed away. An aunt you hardly knew, but she had a stipulation because she was the one who gave you the property originally, right? And she said, I've given you the property now as your Yerusha, right? As your inheritance, I'm now giving you $5 million to put up a home, a majestic home in Yerushalayim on this property, but you got to do it right away. You can't wait. Wow, I can finally put a home on this property in Yerushalayim. You go back and you see all this riffraff there on this property and you say, hey guys, get out of here. And they say, what do you mean? We just told you we don't have to leave. He said, no, I want you out right now. I'm building here. I'm building an edifice. I'm going to build a property here, a beautiful, beautiful home, a palatial estate that will be mine and my family's for many, many generations. So out of here, that's what I'm calling the cops, right? What does this metaphor mean? What's this mushal mean? It means like this. It means that when we have a spiritual inheritance, right? When we have a promise of spirituality and closeness to Hashem in this world and in the world to come. It's the basis of everything here. So then we don't want to let anything get in the way. When we don't have that, when we don't have that promise, so then this riffraff can kind of tell us whatever they want. They can tell us, leave us alone. This is just as much our property as yours. But when you know that you have the treasure, the eternal treasure that's yours, then you're going to say, hey guys, out of here. I'm calling the cops. I'm giving you an hour and your history, right? And this is why I start off the program with the five guiding lights that are dealing with our spirituality. Because we need to build that up first. And once we build that up, and once we have the promise of everything that you deserve in this life, the freedom, the spirituality, the love, the caring, the affection, the payoff, the spiritual payoffs. So then you say you're able to deal with the more difficult with the more stubborn, with the more insistent aspects of the habits and the addiction, and we learn then the skills of learning to have mastery over them. And you will, each of them, I guarantee you, have learned to have mastery over all of the difficulties and all the challenges you're facing. Now, we're going to be using the book throughout the program. Every session is going to be based on a chapter in the book. The book is not required, but I really suggest it highly, because then you can read it yourself. One other thought, we are not charging a fee for this program. At some point, I may give those of you an opportunity to contribute to our campaign, because obviously it's of great cost. But that's not for today. So the goal is not only to go through this book and the 10 guiding lights, but to finish it through this program, those of you who will be able to finish it, and then to teach it to others. And because no Yiddish neshama, no Jewish soul, neshama should be left behind, should be imprisoned in this terrible habit or addiction. And I make you a promise. It's a promise. Now listen, I try to be true to my word. If you follow this program seriously, and you really follow it seriously, not just sit around and kind of eat popcorn and garbage, right, and sleep through half of it, then you're going to come out with the freedom to live, to love, and to serve Hashem. You're going to come out a free bird. You're going to come out with an incredible, incredible gifts of life. That's my commitment to you, my obligation to you, and you're going to see it's going to be true. So that's the kind of the kickoff to this program. So with that, let's get started. Unquestionably, the greatest power that drives the this universe on a kind of a molecular, if you will, psychological perspective is the drive for sexuality, which has always been there, but because of the world we live in and the effect of digital media, this drive for sexuality has inundated our world. Avram Tversky, the late Avram Tversky, Zatzal, who was so such a force, such a power in dealing with addictions, said on that. Then in his life, he had treated directly or indirectly through his programs 44,000 addicts. Some were dealing with alcohol, some were dealing with drugs, right? Different kinds of addictions. He said, but never in his life had he come across the power of the sexual addiction. And today in America, there's somewhere between 40 and 50 million sex addicts, right? And a great number beyond that are not even addicted, but they're living a life that is dominated by this obsession. One third of all the downloads on the internet on any given day is focused on sexuality. Incredible. One third of all downloads. It's clearly the strongest driving force in the world. And it covers the planet like soot. Everything, it touches everything. Nothing escapes its influence. Its power on our internal drives, our urges, together with technology, has created what I see as the world's fastest religion. I call it a religion because people live by it, right? I want to start off this program with a Devar Torah, right? That I saw yesterday. And it's so apropos. Since we are now learning the parshas of Yetzias Mitzrayim, leaving Mitzrayim, so at the beginning of last week's parsha, of yesterday's parsha, we have the confrontation between Aaron and Moshe Rabbeinu and Paro. And Aaron has a stick in his hand, he has a rod. And he turns the rod into a reptile. Now Paro has his own magicians, right? And he says, okay guys, do your stuff. And they take a stick and they turn it into a reptile as well. Well then Aaron's reptile turns back into a stick and devours the reptiles of Paro's magicians. Well, that's strange. I mean, the whole thing is strange. What does it all mean? But really, why did Aaron's reptile become a stick again and then devoured it? The reptile should have devoured the reptiles, right? So here's a beautiful Devar Torah I saw from Rabbi Brog yesterday. He said like this, why a reptile? Because Paro saw himself as the world's greatest reptile. He was the king of the Nile. Paro declared that I created the Nile. I created myself. I am a deity, right? And the same way a crocodile, right, is the king of the Nile. I am the king of the world. So Hashem said to Paro, he said, Paro, you're not a king. You're not even a reptile. You're nothing. You're a toothpick. I'll show you. I'll take a little stick. I'll take Aaron's rod and I'll turn it and I'll have it devour your reptiles as if they were sticks, as if they were toothpicks. You're nothing. Paro was the strongest man in the world. He saw himself as infallible. And now he was a nothing. And this is what I want to tell you. You see, the drive for sexuality may be the greatest power in this world, most powerful force online. It drives everything. Look what's happening in Washington, right? All over the world. And sexuality is Mitzrayim. And the reality is that nobody leaves Mitzrayim. But you're going to find that through this program and how it teaches you to develop a love of Hashem, a love for Torah, a love for spirituality, then this becomes a power far greater than the power of sexuality. Not that it deprives you of the ability to love. On the other hand, the contrary, it strengthens it. It enhances it. But it overcomes that insatiable desire for sexual gratification without love, without meaning. That gratification that destroys lives, your life, lives of those you care for, both in this world and the world to come. So this program is about leaving Mitzrayim, a free person, a free bird. But the goal is not just to leave Mitzrayim, to leave the addiction. The goal is the quality of a life that you're going to lead. Because as the Rambam says, Maimonides says that sexuality is one of the greatest powers in the universe. And the only thing that's strong enough to overcome it is the love of Hashem and love of Torah. So the kind of fulfillment you're going to discover as you go through this program, and you're not going to come out of this necessarily looking like me, maybe 30, 40 years younger. No, you'll be yourself in every sense of the word. But you'll be fulfilled in a way that you've never understood before. And it's that fulfillment that will enable you to step out of that prison. So whatever your symptoms, whatever your age, whatever your thoughts, whatever your feelings, no matter how long you've been in this, no matter what you've done, No matter how compelling it is every day, every moment of your life, you're going to find a way out. You're going to discover a way out because Hashem knows where each of you is and He's behind you. He's rooting for you. He's waiting for you to develop the skills and the understanding that will enable you to get out of this. And when you do, you're going to achieve something that nobody else has ever achieved. You're going to climb your own Everest. You're going to experience a sense of exhilaration and pride in yourself. And you're going to go beyond the biological and physiological and emotional challenges that keeps the whole world imprisoned. But you're not going to be in that prison. You're going to be out of it. All I ask is that you follow. You follow everything I teach you carefully, by yourself or with a chavrusa. And that's my word to you. You follow it, and you're going to be free. So now, we're going to deep dive into the book. And I'm going to read you a story from the book. The story runs about 3 or 4 pages. But it's the reason why I wrote this book. It's the reason why I developed this program. It can get a little bit hairy, a little bit scary for some, for others not so much. But I want to tell you this. It's about a fellow named Chaim. And I went over what I wrote with Chaim very carefully. So every word he is aware of, and he signed off on each word. So bear with me as I read, and I'll try to read it as carefully, as slowly, and with as much feeling as possible, because this story really changed my life, and it sets the stage for all the work we're going to do. So here we go. We're going back to March 2021. COVID struck its first blow, and the world, especially the from world, was reeling. That's when I was first contacted by Chaim, a from family man, Orthodox family man in his early 40s. He was well respected. He was a professional, a solid member of his community. And when he called me, his voice was weak, trembling, even cracking. What he shared with me still rings in my mind and probably will for the rest of my life. Although his words are not easy to read, the message and outcome are truly life-changing. This is our first phone conversation. I said to Chaim, or Chaim said to me, "Thank you for speaking to me. You can hear that I'm very weak. I'm slowly recovering from a near-death bout with COVID. I was hit very hard. I tried to go to the hospital, but there was no room. Right now I'm recovering at home. I want you to hear my story and hope you'll be able to hear me and help me." I agreed to listen quietly to a story that struck me to the core, unlike any I've ever heard before. And Chaim continued. A few days after I became ill, when the virus was at its toughest, strongest, I was unable to move. I was incapacitated on my couch. My breathing was failing. It was about 11 p.m. when I became aware that I may not make it through the night. I was fading fast. I was entering into a coma that I was sure I would never come out of. It was clear that I was facing the last minutes of my life. I realized that I had to say vidui. Vidui is something someone says you say or someone says for you at the last moments of life. But I had no strength. I felt myself slipping into a different world. It was dark and frightening. Then as I was sinking into a dark hole, I saw a flash that seemed to be from another reality. It took an instant, but I was like a video running a million frames a second. I watched as the last 30 years of my life passed in front of my eyes. It was a flash, but every frame was crystal clear. "What was so frightening about what you saw?" That's what I asked Chaim. And this is what he told me. "Since my early years, I kept a dark secret from the world. No one knew, not my parents, my siblings, my friends, and now, not my wife and kids. To the world, I was like everyone else. I tried to be and act like a from Jew. But what no one knew was that I had been a sex addict for more than 30 years. I was an innocent kid. I enjoyed learning and playing baseball. I never looked for this stuff. It started when the kid in my class took me to his house and showed me a video. It shocked me. I can still see that video in front of my mind today. I never stopped remembering it. I tried everything to get out of my mind, but nothing worked. I finally gave in and began looking for more videos to watch. Once it started, I had no way of stopping it. And over the years, I graduated from there to doing incredibly horrible things. The addiction grew and grew without boundaries. Nothing stopped me. But for some reason, I held on to my orthodox identity. Every Yom Kippur, I would ask Hashem to forgive me and help me. I even tried to get professional help, but nothing changed. All I could do was hope that it would go away or that I would never be caught. It became a dangerous game, but I always managed to avoid being exposed. I finished yeshiva and went out to college and got a degree, got married and had kids, but I never stopped my addiction. Sometimes I felt guilty because I knew that I could destroy lives, especially my family's and my own. But I always managed to forgive myself, rationalize what I was doing, and continue. I just surrendered over and over to my impulse and sexual urges and convinced myself that this was my nature. This is how Hashem created me, to have huge sexual urges and so on. I had no choice but to satisfy them. I thought Hashem understood. I even told myself that Hashem must have created me this way, and he let me see the videos when I was a kid. He certainly knows that I tried. I was sure he understood and would forgive me. There was one consistent force that kept me going, even though there were moments when I told myself I had enough and I had to change. That's when I always heard this voice inside of me, driving me, saying, Chaim, don't kid yourself. This is the real you. Don't deny who you are. This is what you need to take care of yourself. I heard that voice over and over again. It always felt so calming and reassuring. I could never resist believing it. That gave me permission I needed to give in. Getting back to my night at COVID, I was seeing my life come to an end. But the images were all in front of me, right at that moment. But now I saw differently everything that I had done, almost like I was aware of how my life was viewed from a different world. This time I was seeing everything from what it really was. I became frighteningly aware that everything I had done and always forgave myself for was clearly hideous and ugly. Suddenly I felt repulsed by what I saw. How could I have done this in my life? Now it was so clear. How could I have ever missed it? It was as if it was hidden from me. I had lived a life of self-deceit and had no way of escaping. I was facing the last moments of my life with horrific image of myself. But beyond that, all this was something even more frightening. Once again, I heard that same voice that I had trusted and followed over throughout my life that reassured me for 30 years. It was now telling me something very different. It was no longer my friend and advisor. It was a tone harsh and accusing. It was telling me I was completely responsible for the way I led my life, and I was going to have to answer for everything. I spent my entire life following that voice. I gave myself permission to surrender my urges and never stop living my life on the prowl. Now that same voice turned on me. At that moment, I realized it was not my friend or advisor. It was my enemy and always was. It was inside of me. It was outside of me, alien, and clearly determined to destroy me. This was its plan all along from the very first moments. It was one long life of entrapment that I had fallen into. Now it was as if it was summoning me. I could imagine it saying, you have lived your life this way, and now you must come with me. And I knew where he was taking me. I actually felt myself being pulled into a dark, terrible place. But I had no choice. I was helpless to fight. I knew that voice was right. I had done it all. I had no answer. I had no excuses. I couldn't resist. I had to go to surrender to whatever it was leading me to. It was out to claim my neshama forever. I had been fooled for almost my whole life. And now I was going to pay in a way that would never, ever, ever end. Then in the fog, I saw two eyes glaring at me. The voice had eyes. They were looking at me from the dark. They were vengeful, angry, unforgiving, and punishing. I shivered in fear. The eyes were judged. the judge and the jury, declaring my guilt and fate. I realized it was never just the voice. Those eyes had been watching me throughout my life. As I fell into every trap, one after the other, since I had been that innocent kid mesmerized and captured by that first video so many years ago, I was petrified, helpless to fight. I had felt I had no choice. I had to surrender. But then I said to Chaim, but you're still here to share with me what you saw, what happened that changed everything. And this is what he said. I was telling myself that I should just go and slip into the coma and leave this world without resistance. I deserved it all. But then I heard a very different faint voice coming from within me that I had never heard before. At first it shocked me. It said, Chaim, you can't surrender. Don't go. You have to fight for your life, for your Olam Haba. You can't let yourself go into that other place. Immediately I understood what was at stake. But how could I resist? I deserved my fate. I knew I was guilty. The accusations were right. I was guilty. I actually felt torn between the two worlds, to go quietly or to fight for my neshama. But even if I wanted to fight, how can I resist? I deserve nothing. I was humiliated and exposed beyond anything I had ever known. Yet for some reason I will never understand, I said to myself, maybe Hashem will still listen to me. I closed my eyes and said, Hashem, I know I deserve nothing, but I'm still asking you with all my heart, please help me. Please give me one more chance. I was now broken and crying, but at least I was speaking to Hashem. The next moment, without any reason, an image came into my mind. I saw my great-grandfather, my elder Zaidi. He had died before I was born, but I was brought up with a picture, with his picture prominently displayed in our living room. Then I remembered that something somewhere in our bookcase was a safe for a book he had written. I never could read more than a few paragraphs. He was a Hasidic Rebbe in Poland with a large following. I don't know how, but somehow I dragged myself almost lifeless over to the bookcase. And there it was, like it was there waiting for me. I opened it and slowly turned the pages. I held it very tight. Zaidi, I am your great-grandson. I have wasted my life and deserve nothing. I ask Hashem to give me another chance. Please speak for me. Please help me, Hashem. Give me one more chance. I held the sefer, unable to move. But I struggled through the few pages and said to Hillam, I knew I had to stay awake. I was certain that if I go to sleep, I would never wake up. I forced myself to stay up all night. And before dawn, I finally fell asleep. When I woke up 3 hours later, it was felt very eerie and like a different world. I was still in a COVID fog. At first, I asked myself if I was alive. Then I saw the window and the sun was shining. It was the most beautiful sun I had ever seen. I was very weak and disoriented, but I realized I was still alive. I said, Modeh ani lefonecha, in a way that I had never said before. And I knew that my tefillos, my prayers, and my Zaidi's tefillos had been answered. Hashem had given me another chance to live. But it also meant that there was no going back. My life had to be different. I had no idea how. Every bone in my body had been trained to think and feel and be dictated by my sexual urges. Every person I saw became a victim to exploit. Every thought, every action was tainted by the virus of my sexual urges. Even when I tried to daven, my mind went straight to my urges. How was I going to keep my word? I thought to myself, if Hashem has given me life, I need to learn how to be a Jew, a human being, a father, a husband, a member of Klal Yisrael. Hashem gave me another chance to have a chelik, a portion of my Olam Haba. But I realized that I need to devote my life to achieve it. This is why I'm calling you, Shaya. I heard you have helped people like me. Can you help me keep my promise? I'll do anything you ask of me. Just please don't turn me away. This is the story I heard from Chaim 3 years ago when he and I began to work together. I want to tell you that Chaim is a very different person now. He is completely free of any of his urges. We all have urges. We all have thoughts here and there, but none of them represent any kind of real challenge to him. He's beyond all of that. He is a different person. I read the story of Chaim because he's indicative of almost everyone we come across. No one ever planned to be in this situation. No one wanted this. No one got up in the morning and said, please, Hashem, expose me to this stuff so I can be compelled, I can be I can be imprisoned by these thoughts and feelings that deprive me of the ability to live and to love and to serve you. No one wanted it. So, with this story, we begin our journey. And in the same way that Chaim, who had been involved deeply in this stuff for 30 years, discovered that there was a way out, discovered there was a pathway to freedom, each of you, Be'ez Hashem, will also discover, whatever it may be. For some it's mild, and for others it may be very intense. For some you're kind of able to lead a life that gives you some degree of fulfillment, and for others you've been deprived of a life that gives you fulfillment. Wherever you are, whatever the situation may be, whatever the degree of your involvement, of the habit or the addiction, you like Chaim, are going to find a way out. Because you're going to learn what you need to learn to be this free person. I want to continue on the book a little bit, because I want to give you just a few more examples of other individuals that I've come across. Since writing the book, by the way, there have been many, many more. But this is just a what I call four dreams of freedom. And they each have one thing in common. Nobody wanted to go there. This was not on anybody's bucket list, right? And you have to understand something else. In the same way that Chaim has this dialogue with the eyes, with the voice. And who is the eyes? And who is the voice? We know who the eyes and the voice are. We call them the Yitzhahara. We call them the Satan. We call them Malach HaMavis. We call it that malevolent force that entraps us, that promises us everything, and then becomes our prosecutor and executioner. I want to read you a few more. These are very brief, but they're very telling. And there's one particularly about a woman, a young woman, that I want to share with you. My name is Yaakov. To the world, I'm a very successful businessman who has devoted my life to my family, Torah, and keeping Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael close to my heart. However, I carry a very painful secret. When I was 14, I was exposed to a very disturbed member of our community who took advantage of me and swore me to secrecy. I was too frightened to share what happened. Decades have passed, and I have never been able to get these memories out of my mind. I have spent a lifetime seeking a therapeutic cure, but nothing has ever helped. This memory is burned into every moment of my life. Today, I suffer continuously because even though I have a family that I love, I find myself attracted to people I work with in a way that I have never really desired. I'm just attracted to them against my own will. I'm ashamed to say it's my daily fight. I know I could lose everything because it's so powerful and so much stronger than I am. With every tefillah, I daven to Hashem to help me find freedom, my unwanted memories, thoughts, and unwelcome desires. That's Yaakov. Now we're going to look at Chava. My name is Chava. I am 37 years old, mother of four children. I attended Beis Yaakov in seminary. I studied computer science on an online program and married when I was 22. My husband learned and worked in mortgages. He learned in yeshiva, that is, and worked mortgages. About 5 years ago, I had a difficult pregnancy and I went into a serious depression that was rooted in early childhood loss of a loved one. I required intense therapy to deal with my depression and was referred to a therapist whom I saw for almost 2 years. Even though progress was very slow, I became very attached to my therapist and believed in her ability to eventually help me through my depression. A few months into therapy, she told me something that changed my life. She told me that the more she understood me and who I really am, the more she senses that there is a truer and deeper me that yearns to be with a woman as a way of compensating for my early loss in life. In my desperation for answers, I began to accept her therapeutic guidance. That's in quotation marks. I found myself communicating with other women online and even joined online support groups for women, many of whom were not Jewish. This led to a relationship I developed with one woman who was a member of one of the groups. I truly believed that if I pursued this relationship, I would never be vulnerable to depression again. With my therapist's support, I informed my husband that while I loved him, I decided to find personal fulfillment by pursuing another relationship. Gradually, this led to my decision to separate, arrange for shared custody of the children, and seek happiness elsewhere. I moved out and shared time caring for the children. After a few months, it was clear that I did not and would not find the happiness that I longed for. One night, I awoke when my kids were with my husband. I felt very alone. I realized what a special and caring husband I really had and how much I had hurt him, our kids, and myself by accepting that the answer was pursuing a life that was centered around my own needs. My relationship with my new partner, in quotation marks, was empty and devoid of anything but the shallowest of mutual selfish needs. I had literally thrown away my life because I was vulnerable and fell into the wrong hands. Over a year has passed and I am still separated. I want to turn back the clock and return, but I am stuck like a fly on flypaper. My mind and heart were taken captive by people I trusted and believed in. I had tattoos on my body, piercings, and even considered surgery after to alter my body. Baruch Hashem, I never went that far. That's how much my mind and heart were taken captive. Now I'm stuck. I want to go home, but I feel like an Israeli woman lured into marrying an Arab and living with his family in an Arab village. I don't know how to go home. And I don't know if I'll ever be accepted back. Yet I'm determined to find the path through Hashem. It'll take me time, but it'll happen. I pray for Hashem's assistance to achieve the freedom and to leave the cruelty and empty life and return to the life I once knew. I want to read you one more fascinating situation. Actually, I'm not in the book. It's something that I came across just a few weeks ago. A young man from a very Orthodox family. Father was a teacher in a Rebbe in a cheder. The family had no internet, only flip phones. There were very few magazines in the house. And now this young man was stuck in a lifestyle that he couldn't get out of. And the question is, how did he fall into it? So he shared with me the following scenario that he had forgotten about himself. And I'm sharing this story with you just to help you understand how this Yetzer Hara, this sudden, this Malach HaMavis kind of creeps into our brains and overtakes us. This young man was learning, he was learning Chumash, Bible. And they were discussing in the class the circumcision of Avraham. And he was such a kind of a innocent kid. The text doesn't really say where the circumcision is. Now, the other kids in the class knew what it was talking about. Everybody knew this was like third or fourth grade. But he didn't know. And he raised his hand and said, where is this circumcision? Now, to the other kids in the class, this was absurd. And they started to laugh at him. At that moment, he felt a deep sense of embarrassment. But he had the picture of the genitalia in his mind when he realized what they were talking about. And the combination of the embarrassment and that image stayed with him, and he couldn't let go of it. And for that moment on, he became obsessed with this genitalia. And this led him down some very, very scary and frightening paths. And there are many stories. The young man who was with his father in the parking lot, and he innocently picked up a card, a playing card, and for the first time he turned it over and saw a pornographic picture, and he put that in his pocket. And this was a kid of no more than 10, 11 years old. Everything changed at that moment. You see, every situation that we're going to go into, and yourselves as well, and we're going to, this becomes a very important factor in the work that we're going to be doing. Each one of you began in a way that you never wanted, never understood what you were getting into. And even if there was a kind of inquisitiveness, a curiosity, you had no idea where it would lead. But for the most part, there wasn't even an inquisitiveness or a curiosity. For the most part, it was just something that came upon you suddenly, like a banshee. It jumped out of nowhere. Someone touched you. You saw a picture. You saw a person. Right? You read something. Someone told me the other day that his situation began with a flip phone. He didn't know that the phone had a browser. And he hit the wrong button, and all of a sudden he saw pictures for the first time in his life. He's now married 15 years later, and he's still struggling with this. Right? You see, no one wanted this. No one was interested. But once it takes hold, it becomes like a fly on flypaper. It's impossible to get rid of. Now, I want to read you a fable, right? I wrote this fable for the book. And I think it says a lot about how we see this challenge and how we see the solution. This is called The Fable of the Abducted Prince. In a far-off land, a benevolent king reigned with great love for his subjects. Each year, the king would set aside a special time to visit the many towns in his kingdom, and he was showered with the honors and loving praise worthy of such a monarch. The king, however, carried a deep sadness within, as he and the queen were childless. For countless generations, the monarchy had been handed down from father to son. Yet years of marriage passed, and no child was born to the king and queen. Imagine the rejoicing throughout the kingdom when, after many agonizing years of childlessness, the queen gave birth to a son. When the prince was approaching maturity and just beginning to understand life, the king followed the tradition of his father and generations before him. The king would take his son for a walk each day in the countryside, where he would teach him the wisdom of the 10 guiding lights. These guiding lights led to the enchanting gift of being able to serve Hashem, and would prepare the prince for his divine destiny to inherit the throne and rule the kingdom after the king's passing. After the prince had mastered the 10 guiding lights, the king would give his son a small black pouch containing 10 illuminated precious stones they had received from his own father. Each of these stones represented one of the 10 guiding lights. Each served to represent a source of great wisdom and understanding that would enable the prince to assume the monarchy and to possess the ability to be free to serve Hashem, and would also be a model for his people. And so it was, after completing the 10th of the final guiding lights, the king placed the black velvet pouch in his son's hands. These, my son, are yours to carry with you throughout your life. They will guide you and protect you and guide you as you lead our people in the wisdom of serving Hashem. And when your own son becomes of age, you will teach him what I have taught you, and you will possess these same stones, you will pass these same stones on to him, just as I have given them to you. Just as they completed the ceremony from father to son that had been carried out for countless generations, the prince and the king heard a heart-rending cry from the forest. The king left the prince and walked over to see where it was coming from. He searched and found nothing. However, when he returned, the prince had vanished without a trace. The king was terrified. Where had his beloved son disappeared to? He ran through the forest, crying out his son's name. But the lad was gone. Someone had snatched his beloved prince. The king was brokenhearted. Suddenly, his life was no longer the same. He mourned and yearned for his son. He no longer felt able to visit his subjects. Instead, each year he would dress as a common man and search the countryside looking for some trace of his beloved son. Years passed, yet he clung to hope and continued his search. Year after year, as he walked through his land undetected by his subjects, he wondered when he would eventually find his son, the prince. Who would he be? What would he remember? Would he still be suited to be his heir, and as he once dreamed? One day, after many years of searching, the king passed a secluded farm nestled in the mountainous woods and saw a brilliant light shining from the window. It was a small hut at the end of the field. The light piqued his curiosity. As he approached the house, he saw the light was emanating from 10 precious illuminated stones placed neatly in the windowsill. He came closer to the window. It was clear that these were 10 stones that he had given to his son many years ago. His heart seemed to stop beating. Was this mountain hut the home of his lost prince? Perhaps it belonged to someone who had found the stones on his son's dead body. Perhaps it was the person who had snatched away the prince. Why were these stones placed in the window of a small hut? He held his breath and knocked on the door. A young man answered. Many years had passed since the king had seen him, but there was no question. The eyes, the hair, the mouth, all clear signs that this was the precious young man who had been snatched away from him years ago. He stood at the doorway almost in a daze. "Can I help you?" the young man asked gently. "I am thirsty after a long journey," the king answered. "Can I come in and have something to drink?" "Certainly. And as for a tired wayfarer, there is also a need for something to eat. Please sit. I rarely see any travelers here." "What is your name?" asked the king. The young man hesitated. "I will tell you the name I gave myself, but the truth is I have no name." "Why don't you have a name?" "I am a man whose past has been stolen." "How was it stolen?" "Many years ago, I knew my name. I was a prince, and my father was the king. And I would walk the forest, and he would teach me all I needed to know to serve Hashem, preparing me to be king many years later, after he left this world." "You certainly don't look like or live like a prince," noted the king. "Of course I don't. And this is the reason. One day, when he and I were in the forest, just as he had completed teaching me the final lesson of the 10 guiding lights to serve as my future role as the king, we heard a piercing cry, and he went to see where it was coming from. Just as he left me, a large, powerful man grabbed me, tied my hands and feet, and dragged me into a cave where he hid me for many hours. I heard my father calling out my name, but I was silenced by this man. After that, he imprisoned me in the secret cottage deep in the forest. I asked him why he had taken me away from my father and people I loved. He told me he was determined to break and destroy my spirit and leave me and my people broken and shattered. Then when I would be reduced to only a shell of a person, he would claim the monarchy and rule by his authority. Day after day, he relentlessly forced me to see and hear hideous and depraved images, repulsive words and thoughts in order to corrupt my mind. Why don't you just kill me? I asked him, because I want you to leave your body whole. I want to take your soul, he replied. I want to leave you empty of life and love, to make sure you are never again accepted by your people or Hashem. For me, this is even better than your death. This is what he told me over and over, yet I remember something my father taught me about life's many challenges. Nothing ever occurs in our lives without Hashem's loving hand and involvement, and everything is for our good. Surely this was no different. Even this beast of a man was a messenger from Hashem. What he did not realize was that whenever I was alone in the dead of night when he slept, and after he was certain he had succeeded in gradually destroying my princely soul, I took out my black velvet pouch and gazed at the illuminated stones. Each jewel brought me back to the truth of the 10 guiding lights. Whatever images and depravity he forced me to see and hear simply dissolved into the air. I never relinquished my soul for a moment. I never gave up. I knew I would prevail. I remembered the prince despite all of his determined efforts. One day he thought he had achieved his mission. He announced, I no longer have a need to destroy you because you are no longer alive. You are no longer a prince. You are a depraved pauper with no past. You are an empty and broken vessel. No one will ever look at you again. You are free to go, but you have no place to go. And though I am setting you free, I now own your mind, your body, and your soul. You are mine forever. And yet he was mistaken. I was never his, and he never owned me, only outwardly. Now I was a broken, penniless pauper instead. But inside I remained the prince. The 10 guiding lights and their precious stones kept me safe and protected. Nothing that he ever forced me to see or hear or do could deprive me of who I truly am, or make me forget what I had learned from my father, the king. The king heard his son speaking, and his heart began to soar, yet he remained cautious and restrained himself. The king then pointed to the stones. Tell me, young man, why are you still here in this hut, and why have you placed these stones here? What is their value to you? These are the stones that my beloved father gave me. I could no longer return home. Who would believe my story? Was my father still alive? Did that evil man corrupt my beloved people? I looked like a pauper. Would anyone believe me that I was a prince? I decided to place these stones in the window of my hut in the hope that my father is still alive and he will not stop searching for me. This was my only hope. My father was still alive. Then perhaps he would pass through, see the illumination of the stones in the window of my hut and recognize these are the stones he gave his son. He would see that I am the same son who was abducted in the forest and have not changed. Then I would know that I have a name, that Hashem, that I have a name, and that Hashem welcomes me back to my land and my people. The prince pointed to the stones. You see, these stones are the secret to my survival. Every day I gazed at them. They reminded me of my father and the 10 guiding lights that he taught me, and I was fulfilled with a renewed sense of hope and inspiration. Each day I learned how the 10 guiding lights had the power to purify my princely soul from the depravity and filth I was exposed to. Now I understand that these guiding lights gave my ancestors the strength and wisdom to lead my people in the service of the Creator. I never could have understood this before due to my abduction and everything I have gone through. I have gained greater understanding now than I can ever achieve otherwise. However, I will not leave this hut until my father, the king, arrives and recognizes that I am his true son, and that I have been faithful to everything he and my ancestors hold sacred. The king touched his son on the cheek and said, I am your father, the king, and you are my son, the prince. You have endured a challenge beyond us all, and you have emerged as a true leader. Now you will accompany me to the palace and join me as we visit the citizens of our kingdom. The prince had become all he was destined to be and learned the secret of being free to serve Hashem. That's the fable. See, the fable and Chaim are the same. They're the same as anybody who has been abducted, whose life has been abducted, who has been corrupted, who has been seduced. who has been deprived of a life free of this obsession. And the purpose of this program and the thrust of the program is to enable you to learn these ten guiding lights. And each one you will find becomes a source of great illumination for you. Now, there's one more thing I wanted to share before we end the program. And that is what I call the new life narrative. Because when you understand and when you appreciate that you never wanted this, that you were never a party to this, that you were never interested in this, and that it overtook your life, then you begin to appreciate that whatever happened to you can unhappen, that you can reverse all of the processes, that even though you may be a prisoner physiologically to what's happening, or emotionally, or cognitively, once you realize that you never really wanted this, then you can begin to appreciate that there's a way out for you. So I think it's very crucial for each of you to begin to go back to those first moments and to begin to appreciate how you were lured into something you were never really interested in. And when you do this, we then begin the first step of our journey to freedom. And this is going to end our first session. The next session we're going to have is going to be on the first guiding light, which will be a very meaningful meditation and the meaning of how one learns to regain the ability to love, how to overcome the power of sexual urges that deprive us of the ability to love and to return to that superb, sublime experience of being able to love oneself, love another, love Hashem. And that'll be the first of the guiding lights. And we'll be doing that Bez Hashem next week. For all of you who are interested in pursuing this program from beginning to end, well, you're going to come out of it a very different person. And if you're interested in the Chavruso, you'll be receiving material tomorrow, and you'll be able to find someone with whom to go through the program with. So, and you'll also be receiving information about how to ask your questions through our website, through our email, and chat capabilities that will enable you to go through this program successfully. So with that in mind, I wish you all great success and hope that each of you will feel the exhilaration and liberation of breaking free. I wish you all a very good night. Bye-bye.